Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable, and that's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back, and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of an airport this time in China. And I know that there's going to be background noise, and I apologize for that, but it's kind of the nature of our podcast. We don't do our podcast in a sterile environment. We never edit or take things out or put things in, unless, of course, we have done it in the past for security reasons. Like if, for instance, I'm interviewing somebody and they accidentally reveal a name or a place, a location, or a project that they feel will cause danger to them or the people that they serve together with, then we will go back through and try to extract those moments. But for the most part, I record this podcast not in a sterile environment in a cubicle or a studio somewhere in New York or some other big city. I do it on the road, and it comes in a raw format, which means that sometimes you're going to be hearing background noise, which might be distracting from time to time. But I know a lot of our supporters like you will listen to this podcast not because of the packaging, but because of the content. And here is a specific piece of Christian content that you will not hear anywhere else. I almost guarantee it. I listen to a lot of podcasts on a regular basis. I read a lot of Christian news, and we produce a lot of Christian news. And I've never heard anyone share what I'm about to share with you, but it's so important. The reason I'm going to be sharing from this podcast is we're about ready to move into our Business as Mission meeting. Our Business as Mission meeting is something that we have been doing for many years, where we bring in Christians from around the world and we expose them to ways that we have been doing and running businesses in various nations between China and Jerusalem, and how we use that as a platform for missions, for missionaries and their families, as well as for end-time evangelism. Now, this is really, really important, and we did this Business as Mission for the very first time. I'm kind of getting over a kind of a call frame, so there might be a little bit of distraction even with my voice. But about a little over a decade ago, I can't remember exactly what year it was. It was definitely before 2014. It was before 2012. I can't remember. Let's say around 2008 or 2009. We ran our very first Business as Mission conference in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and we brought in people from around the world. And on that trip, we also went to other locations as well. One of those locations was at the Virginia Military Institute. We had some friends at the Virginia Military Institute. We went there and we hosted a day seminar of Business as Mission. We had a lot of cadets from the Virginia Military Institute come and join us. Out of that was a young believer and his wife that were entrepreneurs, and they had already started to look at business, and they've been doing very well in business, and they wanted to figure out ways that they could use their business to support missions, specifically missionaries in areas that are unreached, working with people groups that are unreached to complete the Great Commission. They were very, very keen on that. They were very curious on it. Me and this young guy became good friends. And this young guy is a passionate businessman as well as a passionate evangelist. And his business was just going gangbusters. And we saw something that will relate directly to what you are seeing in the news today. Now, this is not a political podcast, but it is going to go into the political and spiritual realm. And some people might listen to this podcast and not be very happy with it. I often, whenever we touch on things that can be thought of as political, where we oftentimes get chastised by our friends and chided for stepping over bounds or going into an area that might be perceived as being politically influential. one, we're not political, and two, I would argue our ability to influence anything. I mean, we have a handful of listeners from around the world. For a missions podcast, it definitely punches above its weight, but we're in no way, quote unquote, influential. I mean, we're not the BBC or Air America or anything like that, right? Where we have a massive daily audience. But we do have individuals like you that we feel completely committed to share information that you will not get anywhere else. And one of the things, if you've been watching the news at all, is you are seeing splashed across the headlines about the former President Trump of the United States being prosecuted for fraud. And he was convicted and has been fined with $500 million. Now, I don't know how much you've looked into this, but it's not what it seems, especially with the story that I'm about to tell you with our direct experience that relates directly to what happened to President Trump for business as missions. We are seeing something that is starting to pop up, and I had said that we would see this, and we had already prepared for it, and I'm going to be going into our next business as mission meeting, preparing our friends and partners on how to do certain investments in the future with this knowledge in their tool belt. What knowledge? The knowledge of what took place with President Trump. Because if it can happen to a former president, it can happen to anyone. Now, basically, if you don't know what happened with President Trump, or even worse, you think you know, but you've only seen the headlines in the news, I promise you, it's not all what it seems to be. Basically, President Trump was prosecuted in New York City because he got favorable loans and insurance by evaluating his property at too high of a rate, or saying that his property was worth more than it was actually worth. There were no victims. No banks and no insurance company, which he's been accused of defrauding. So the suit is, the prosecution was based on this idea, this one simple idea. You can look this up, you can challenge me if you like. This is exactly what you will find. Now there's two ways of looking at it, but these are the facts. And the facts are this. President Trump is accused of evaluating his property at too high of a rate. Why? So that he could secure favorable loans and favorable insurance. Now, there were no loans There were no loans that were unpaid. There were no victims. There was nobody that prosecuted him or brought him to court. There was no bank or insurance company, which he was accused of defrauding, that came forward and said that this guy cheated us by lying to us the value of his property. First of all, anybody that has ever gotten a loan from a bank or covered by insurance, they will tell you what your assets are worth. You can say all day what your assets are worth, and you can challenge what they say your assets are worth. But at the end of the day, they have their own evaluation, and they set their loans and insurance coverage based off of their evaluation, not yours. So already from the very get-go, there's a problem with what we see with President Trump's prosecution. Because it's a complete farce that he lied about the value of his properties so that he could get a favorable loan and favorable insurance. All the loans were paid back 100%. All of the insurance was paid on time. There were no victims. Everybody made money. The banks made money. The insurance made money. In fact, they came in as witnesses and said, hey, listen, we actually went to him asking would he take out a loan. He was strong enough in his own cash to be able to carry his own expenses. But the banks asked for him to take out a loan because they wanted to be a part of his project so that they could make money. And that's what happened. So the bank said that by him securing these favorable loans and favorable insurance, he was actually committing fraud. And as a result, he has been fined more than $500 million, and his company has gone into receivership. which means that he's no longer allowed for the next 3 years to run his own company. Someone else is coming in that is appointed by the judge to run his company for him, and there's nothing he can do about it. How does this relate to Back to Jerusalem? Because more than a decade ago, at the Virginia Military Institute, I met this young entrepreneur. And he had started a company in the US that just started going gangbusters. What he was doing was he was investing in buying property, building up on those properties, and using them as commercial entities. meaning that he would build up on these commercial properties and then lease them out for businesses to rent, for companies to rent that would rent space. And he wanted to use his business to support missions, which he has done. So he's used profits specifically to support missions. But in addition to that, he wanted to provide a way for missionaries like myself, or pastors, evangelists, Christian workers, to put their money into something other than a bank that would have a return. And instead of investing and becoming partners in his investment, what he did was, you know, whether there's a loss or a gain, what I will do is if you give me a certain amount of money, I will sign it over as if it was a loan and you will get 8% return. Now, do you know any bank today that has given 8% return? Do you know any mutual fund that is giving 8% return? Do you know many investments out there that's giving 8% return? It seemed pretty steady. He talked about it with me. He said, hey, if you have any funding at all that you would like to invest, we would like for you to put your retirement here and we could support you and help you as someone who works in missions. He felt that many missionaries, evangelists, pastors are out there serving on a daily basis, and many of them do not look forward to their future or do not plan for their future. They do not plan retirement for their future. So what he wanted to do with his growing business was to provide a way to get annual return that is beneficial to these servants, to these ministers, people that are involved in ministry. Now, I didn't have really that much to invest, but the little amount that I put back on a regular basis, I invested with him. And I got 8% annual return on the investment. I never took it out, I just kind of left it there, which meant it continued to grow on that 8%. So as the 8% came in, the 8% was reinvested, and then it was 8% on the reinvestment that kept being reinvested, if that makes sense at all. It was easy for me. I've done stock investments in the past, watching them, pulling out, following stocks. It felt much better to just put the money in a place where I don't have to think about it and I don't have to worry about it at all, and just do what I believe that God has called me to do, and the little amount that I can put in for that investment, I did. So as a part of my monthly savings, I kind of put it into this investment. Several years later, I get a random email saying that this partner that I've invested with is being investigated by the SEC, which is the Stock and Exchange Committee, or the group that kind of monitors what takes place for investments, banks, and stock exchange. So he's being investigated by the SEC and the FBI. Now I freaked out because I thought that maybe he was involved in something scandalous. So I called him up and I was like, dude, what's going on? Now, I know that I was shown basically everything that was going on. It's not that big of an operation. But because he had a successful multi-million dollar property business and wanted to use it to support missions, he began to see local opposition. And with that, I began to follow the case very closely. I got documents from the SEC regarding the case, read them as thoroughly as I could with my lack of competency. I'm not a lawyer, right? I'm not a tax official, but I was able to understand the gist of the investigation. My friend and his company was later prosecuted by the state prosecutor. And what I learned blew me away. Because what happened was the FBI and the SEC basically said that there were several people that it had given money to my friend with the guarantee of 8% interest, which is basically a loan. So he's paying 8% on a loan, which happens all the time with credit cards and advanced check cashing companies. They do this all day long, but my friend was focused on, and when he was, the prosecutor took him to court, and the judge basically said that the prosecutor came out and said that all of this 8% was based on his investments, and that my friend was overvaluing his investments. Now get this, this is where it gets very, very dicey, and I understand exactly what President Trump was going through. At the center of the prosecution was one specific property. Now this property was evaluated at $18.5 million. And so what little amount of money, and I'm talking about a very, very small fraction that I gave to him, was a part of the whole company, and the company owned several properties, and this was one of the properties. And so this property it's in a part of a major city. It is a big piece of land, and it has a facility on the property that is used as a wedding venue. And the property was appraised, independently appraised, for $18.5 million. But the prosecutor said that basically my friend was running a Ponzi scheme. They actually restructured the legal term Ponzi scheme to be able to fit their dialogue or their prosecution. And they backed it up with the false claim that my friend was overvaluing his property in order to attract investors. And they evaluated the same property that was independently evaluated for $18.5 million, that was conservative evaluation, they evaluated it for $2.1 million. They gave no legal documentation or defense of their evaluation. There were independent people that came into the court and said the property alone, without even anything built on it, which it had a multi-million dollar facility there for hosting functions. And when I say hosting functions, I'm not talking about a barn. This is one of the most cutting edge facilities that has special lighting, speaker systems, fountains, gardens that are all controlled by central electronics that set moods for different functions within the venue itself. Meaning that it can go from a Diwali Indian celebration to a cowboy function to a Victorian age wedding celebration, all with the flip of a switch, where you have background displays, you have a beautiful scenery that pop up on the walls. This is cutting edge technology used within a massive several tens of thousand square feet building that had just been constructed. $2 million would barely cover the driveway on this property. So it was laughable, but there was no recourse. The judge and the prosecutor were in bed together. The judge and the prosecutor already had an agreement. The judge and the prosecutor were not having, they didn't have to make any real case because there was nobody that was non-biased evaluating the case, which became very clear. There was no way to refute. The property itself was a commercial property bringing in at least $200,000 a month in venue services. More than that, but at least $200,000 a month. So the annual income from that $200,000 a month was more than their evaluation. Anyway, what we saw was a complete banana republic ruling, and there was nothing my friend can do about it. Just as we see, one of the things that we see with President Trump is he's got a lot of money to get lawyers and fight the system. But even with the system, even though that the prosecution is clearly fraudulent, the only way that he can appeal is he first has to pay the fine of $500 million. So it's a system that is rigged. You can't even, it's one single person that has control of the ruling, not a jury of your peers, not other judges or a panel of judges. And actually a panel of judges have already overturned a lot of things with the President Trump case in New York City, which our friend that was a part of the business's mission meeting did not have access to. He doesn't have that kind of political power to be able to get the media involved. And so what I saw next churned my stomach and made me sick. The business was prosecuted for running a Ponzi scheme. There were no victims. Nobody said, hey, I'm being cheated over here. Nobody wrote to the government and said, I've been screwed out of my money. I had never been defaulted on any of the payments that I was to receive from my small, measly investment. So I always got 8% return, which was what I was promised. And every single other investor that also invested with this person also got 8%. So he wasn't prosecuted on what he failed to do. The prosecution's argument was because the property value is so low, he will not be able to continue to pay the 8%, which had never happened. So he's being prosecuted for a crime that he had never committed, which is saying that if everybody tried to get that 8%, at one point they wouldn't be able to do it because the pricing of the property was so low that it wouldn't be able to sustain those claims for those that invested. And we're not talking about a lot of investors. So, but he was found guilty. And as a result, his business had to go into the hands of a receiver, same as in New York with the Trump business, had to go into the hands of a receiver. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because the receiver for the company that I'm a part of wrote to me and said, now that you've done the investment, this is the company that you invested in. They've just been found out to be guilty of fraud. The investment that you put in, you are now able to get back your investment up to 25% of your initial investment, which means you lose 75%. But at least you don't lose everything. We kept you from losing everything. I wasn't losing anything. I was gaining. So they said that you can get 25% or you can continue to own a portion of the property, the property investment company. So I opted for the latter. Instead of taking my 25%, I left my money in the company because I believed that my friend was being wrongly accused and that once it was back in his hands outside of the receivership, we would be able to receive the money back. So I continued to stay with the receivership. The receivership has no business experience. The court put my friend's business all under the control of a friend of a certain political party of the city. The friend, that person, the receiver, had no business experience, had no qualifications. By the way, that's kind of what we're seeing right now also with President Trump in Atlanta. Again, I hate to go political, but I'm just pointing out the obvious. He was prosecuted by individuals that were being paid to run the prosecution that had no experience whatsoever with the kind of prosecution that they were running, yet they were receiving massive amounts of money from the government to prosecute Trump. We see the same thing with his company in New York being put into the hands of a receivership that has no experience in doing the kind of work that he does with his company. So my friend's company was put into the hands of a receiver that ran the day-to-day business. And my friend was not allowed to be a part of that running at all. And after 1 year, he got the company back. And guys, what happened was criminal. My friend is trying to figure out the books, but the receiver didn't keep any bookkeeping. By the way, any other business person or business owner would be prosecuted for that. But because this guy was appointed by the judge, he walks away from the company guilt-free for doing nothing. And when I say nothing, guys, I mean nothing. Meaning he did not even pay the bills to keep the lights on. He sucked the money out of the accounts, put them into his own pocket, to which we don't even know how much yet, because there was no books that was kept. So we don't know exactly how much money was coming into the company, how much money was going out of the company. We're trying to get access to the QuickBooks, and they're not giving us access to the QuickBooks. Why? Because they don't want us to know, right now at least, how much the receiver paid himself. One of the most criminal acts that I've ever witnessed. And this was an individual that attended our business as mission meeting. Now, I have full faith, because this business still has the same properties that are still worth the same amount as they were before it went into receivership. And so those tangible assets are still there, thank God. And they still have the ability to make money, thank God. And my friend will have to recover, and I believe that he will. And even if he doesn't, my investment is secure, because the value of the company is so much higher than the measly 25% that the courts and its receivership offered them. The reason I'm sharing that is that this is shaping very much what I'm going to be sharing with the business as mission attendees that come to this conference that we are hosting at Back to Jerusalem. We have individuals from around the world that are going to be coming into our business as mission seminar, where I will be able to give them firsthand information about how to do investments on the mission field between China and Jerusalem in a way that is secure, that they will not have to worry as much, because we have experience of being attacked by governments, not just the governments of China, North Korea, Iran, but even America, where we have seen the enemy come at us, come at Christians, whether you're a ministry, an NGO, or a profit-making business. The enemy's going to throw his darts. Now, sometimes those darts and those arrows are justified. Sometimes your business is being attacked not because the devil is trying to bring you down. It's because you've done some very shady things. Sometimes your business is not succeeding because you're not running things in the right way. Satan has nothing to do with it. Maybe you were trying to not pay your taxes. Or maybe the business that you were running was not fairly paying employees. But what we are doing is we are sharing with Christian business owners, entrepreneurs, and people that want to be involved in business to help with missions. We want to share with them how they can sidestep these landmines. Practical steps that they can use to sidestep the landmines of governments coming after them. We use several different techniques, strategies, and investment strategies to be able to show people how they can hedge their investment against government attacks to be able to support missions. Our business as mission seminar is one of the few in the world like it. Now, there is a business as mission ministry out there, and people that are familiar with business as mission might have heard the term used before. If you've ever heard of the Lausanne Conference, they have several individuals that have written the handbook, if you will, for business as mission. Ours, or the way that Back to Jerusalem talks about business as mission, or even employs business as mission, is completely different. I can give you three special examples. For instance, business as mission as it's understood by the international community, or when I say the international community, I really mean the Western Church. There are three things that if you look at the business as mission handbook, that it is clear that business as mission is not. One of the things that they say is that business as mission is not a platform that can provide visas for missionaries. Business as mission is not a way to cover for activities of evangelism. And business as mission is not a way to provide income for missionaries. Business as mission are individuals that are involved in mission work that wants to come and do investments with using real business for real business purposes with no underlying mission work. Now, what makes Back to Jerusalem a little bit different, and it's not because we try to be different, it's because I have witnessed and observed the Chinese doing business as mission. And one of the things that I've seen is that they do use business as a way to provide visas for missionaries. Now, that's not a strategy. That's reality. The Back to Jerusalem missionaries do use business as a platform to be able to engage in ministry, to provide cover for ministry. That again, that's not a strategy. That's reality. And business as mission, as I've observed it, taking place with Back to Jerusalem missionaries, does provide income for missionaries. So these three things set Back to Jerusalem apart from what we see in the international community for business as mission. Now, we share a lot of details about the kind of business that works in different nations. We share a lot about different strategies that have proven to be successful on the mission field. And now, we also talk about hedging against possible attacks from the government on your business and how to at least prepare yourself for it. We have experience. We've been down that road. And we have practical testimonies to tell you how we were able to make it through. That's just one example. And we're seeing it played out on the world stage right now. That is one of the things that we will be sharing about the Back to Jerusalem Business as Mission meeting. If you would like to attend a Back to Jerusalem Business as Mission meeting, we would love to have you. You'll be able to meet with business owners that are Christian from around the world. You'll be able to listen to them as they share about how they are able to run their business in places like North Korea, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, and use it not only to make money, but also to bring about the light of Christ as a tent-making platform. I want to thank you so much for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of China. God bless.